League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
They've got something new now. It's called the Press Box.
You're back in the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
One in the book! Two to go. Here comes the second hour of the show. He's Nick. I'm Joel. We're the Press Box, and we're coming to you live from Gal Media Studios and courtesy of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. In case you missed it, if you care, since we did a lot of baseball in the first hour, and just so that we get all of the major stories out there, the third and deciding game of the College World Series will be tonight. As Mississippi State took care of business last night against Vandy, otherwise known as Vanderbilt, the Commodores, Nick. No, Lionel Richie does not play for them. And both aces will be available, which is a good thing if you do care to watch some of this. As projected first-round picks, Will Bednar of Mississippi State and Kumar Rocker of Vanderbilt. And Rocker, along with Al Leiter's son, who pitches for Vanderbilt, are going to be top two, top three in the whole draft. But their numbers, pretty good, pretty comparable, should be a good game. Dak Prescott was in the building last night to watch his Mississippi State Bulldogs get the victory. So just throwing that out there for you. Suns and Clippers tonight in L.A., with the Suns trying to close out the Clippers yet again. And the Clippers trying to hang on once again for dear life and do what they did in the previous two series, start 0-2 down and find a way to win. And last night, who the hell saw all of that coming? You and I were both convinced that Trae Young was going to play because he had to play because he's the whole show for them. And the fact that he tried to finish the game the other night, all signs led to, it's not that bad, he's going to play. And then right before the game, you get the announcement, he's out, and you're thinking, oh, Milwaukee in a landslide. And done. Instead, Milwaukee got the crap kicked out of them. They got abused all over the floor. And then on top of it, and please, everybody, get this straight. That game was out of hand and over before Giannis got hurt. And then once Giannis got hurt, and it was nasty, it was a hyperextension. We're waiting again, much like Urquidy. We're waiting for medical reports to come out on Giannis. But that's not a good sign for a Bucks team that is poorly coached, that doesn't know what they're doing half the time, didn't know how to get motivated for a game that they could have taken control of the series regardless of Giannis' help, and now are in very big trouble.
Yeah, and the funny thing about that hyperextension thing, I actually texted a group of my friends, and I said, hey, you know what, I want to start playing basketball a little bit. And two of them were like, yeah, I'm down. One was like, bro, I'm not getting off this couch. There's no way I'm playing. But then after seeing that Giannis injury, I'm like, you know what? Maybe I don't want to play basketball to get in shape. Maybe I'll just keep running because I like my knees and I don't like them bending backwards. And that looked disgusting. And the fact that he even came out, I mean, look, that slow motion angle of it was nasty. Props to the Hawks, though. You're right. Credit to you saying this because I didn't expect it. Actually, I did expect it, but the game was kind of over before Giannis got hurt. Yeah. And it was a late scratch that the team, I don't think, was necessarily aware of until maybe the day of. But this is what McMillan had to say after the game.
We continue to believe. And, you know, what I said to the team was we've been here before where we've lost players on the day of a game. We've had a lot of our starters out throughout this season. And we continue to, you know, basically play next man up role. And the next man up for us, they've been able to take advantage of that opportunity and give us good production, and we've been able to win games. And this has been going on throughout the season. You know, so losing Trae was of course, a big loss for us tonight. But we've been in that position before.
Clearly, the tweak was a lot worse than we all thought. And maybe he knew when he tweaked it the first time, when he stepped on the referee's foot, Trae Young. But clearly, the tweak was a lot worse than we all thought. But the Hawks, to their credit, played pretty well without him. So good for the Hawks. I didn't expect the Hawks to play that well, coming out strong the way they did. I did expect them to play with some intensity. But I thought that all because I thought Trae Young would play. And look, I know Trae Young is not the best three-point shooter in the world, but him on the floor makes them a better team. He does well with scoring inside the paint, mid-range as well. So I don't necessarily need Trae for all his three-point shots, but you still need him to run the offense and have the offense kind of run through him, particularly on a younger Hawks team like that.
Well, kudos to Lou Williams, because as a veteran, seasoned veteran that accepts his role well and knew, hey, as much as I'm a six man that, you know, comes off the bench to score, I'm going to be relied upon more tonight to, like, control the ball, make sure it gets in the right people's hands. So many times he made the extra pass. A shot when he was coming in off the bench as the sixth man, he'd have taken himself from three. He would make the extra pass to the corner, whether it be to Herter or one of those guys, where he found a better look, a cleaner look, a chance for an easier basket for his teammates. And Trae Young was even pointing at him, like, as much as it was everybody was complimenting the shooter, Trae Young was going to find Lou going, not only did he make almost all of his shots, but he distributed the basketball. He kept them in their offense. And Capella should get a lot of credit, too, because throughout this series, Capella has been a guy that has stepped up. He took the challenge of guarding Giannis. Now, the Larry Bird shot that you're bragging about over the corner of the basket was straight luck.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was.
To Capella, he is surrounded. He is double-teamed. Fires one up.
Now, that used to be illegal. That when Larry Bird did it, they waved it off because they used to say there's an imaginary force field above the backboard straight up, which wouldn't allow for shots like that to count. But they've since changed the rule, and he went over the corner.
Good, because that was a dumb rule.
It was a dumb rule.
That was a really dumb rule.
But Capella's played his ass off. Herter's been better than advertised because Bogdanovich has been so up and down. But their role players stepped up, and honestly, the team that should have more talent, their best players not named Giannis, aside from Middleton in one game, really have not. I mean, Drew Holiday, where are you, my friend? Not only are you all defense, but you're on the Olympic team this summer, and you're an all-star, and you're a max player, and you came to this team for this opportunity, and you've just fallen off the planet.
Yeah, that's not good. But look, he plays good defense for the most part, so I can understand a game or two off. You can't really have too many of those in the playoffs because it just hurts your chances defensively. So you really want to be able to play well defensively and be as consistent as possible. I mean, the other thing about Crowder is that he's such a good teammate. I feel like he doesn't really, you know, he's kind of necessary on the floor even when he doesn't do well. You know what I mean? Like his game, like his presence alone impacts the game.
Here's the thing. Milwaukee's a deeper team. They've got a guy like Bobby Portis Jr. that could come in at any time and give them an assist, right? But they're so poorly coached, Nick, on both sides. And there's things that you and I have pointed out over and over, both defensively and offensively. They're lacking the ability to make adjustments. The way that they're still running the same easy-to-defend offense. The way that they're leaving Lopez to get exposed. The way that they're not putting – it took them three games to put Holiday on Trae Young. It's just those are the kind of moves that a playoff team don't – they don't make those moves like that. So that has a lot of concern for me as well.
So I posed this question to you via text last night in regards to your team.
Mm-hmm.
Does the Giannis injury help save Mike's job with the Milwaukee Bucks as the head coach, or – the damage has been done, the mistakes are pretty obvious, and you need to move on from Mike regardless of the Giannis situation and if the Bucks lose the series?
I said maybe at the time, probably because I was also half asleep. But the reason why I said maybe was it's going to be his number one point of defense when he goes in and talks to management at the end of the year. He's going to say, look, we were the head and shoulders. We were the favorite to win it all if Giannis doesn't go down, and you got to give us a chance to run it back. But if you're any kind of media expert on basketball, and if you're in the Bucks front office and you turn on, doesn't matter what channel, people are calling out a shortcoming here or there of the Bucks, and that all is on the shoulders of your head coach. the defensive, everything we just talked about, the defensive adjustments, the fact that when you run high pick and roll and you leave and when there's a switch at the top and you leave Brook Lopez one-on-one with Trae Young, and he immediately starts backpedaling, think he's going to drive, you're giving Trae Young 15 feet of space on over almost every one of his jump shots, and you don't adjust. You don't take Brook Lopez out of the game and put in a Portis or a more athletic, versatile big that can step out on the other side of the pick. We talked about James Harden defense we saw all the time as Rockets fans. If your best player is that good and they're running high pick and roll, then on both sides of the pick, you converge on that best player, you force it out of his hands, and you make someone else beat you. They haven't done any of that.
Yeah, I don't. That part, that's like basic too on the high pick and roll. That's like basic.
And offensively, you still got Giannis bringing it up in the middle of the court where he's easy to put that wall up against, keep him from getting to the middle and defend. And he hasn't changed anything. So I think, you know what the deciding factor is, Nick? They're going to go in the locker room and they're going to start talking to players in their exit interviews. And they're going to say, is this guy the guy that's capable of leading us to a championship? And I think that the veterans are going to be the guys, the PJ Tuckers who came in late, that can say, I've been in different situations on playoff teams. This is what I saw from my time here. They're going to rely on guys that came in late, Jeff Teague, you know, guys that have been in other situations and gone, this is what I noticed. And then they're going to go to their best players and they're going to get their opinions because they matter the most. Because you still got to make Giannis happy. Middleton and Holiday have to be happy. And as much as Cuban changed his mind, Cuban was right on when he said, the other thing you got to take into consideration is who would replace him, because you want to make a change, but if the guy you bring in isn't at least as good or better than who you had, then why do it?
Speaking of Jeff Teague, you want to tell your boy Chuck that he plays for the Bucks and not the Hawks?
Yeah.
Do you want to have that conversation? Maybe send him a text. He might punch you, but you might want to let him know that he doesn't play for the Bucks.
Yeah, he ain't punching me. He just, I mean,
he had a brain fart.
There's no excuse for it, but yeah.
He had a massive brain fart. It happens. I mean, it's not the end of the world. But
I heard you and Charlie talking about it, and there's no excuse for it. But, I mean, I actually get perturbed about stuff like that, because as much as you go, oh, that's just inside the NBA and that makes them great. No, their humor makes them great, but you're still covering the sport at the highest level. You kind of need to know that stuff. And I would tell him that.
I think so, too. He owned it. It's not like he didn't own it. He just, you know, he just didn't know that Jeff Teague was not a Hawk. But there's another clip. I was actually watching the show. I actually missed that part. Charlie Polillo wanted to play the clip. Mm-hmm. When we come back, there's another Barkley clip that I want to talk about in regards to NBA stars being soft. Shocker, right? He got a little aggravated with that, so I'll play a little bit of that. We still haven't talked about the Tour de France fan who officially got arrested after causing that massive breakdown in the Tour de France, causing one cyclist to fall and then causing a domino effect, causing several other cyclists to fall. So she officially got arrested. I want to talk a little bit about
that. We got that Houston traffic situation and where they rank nationally, because there's something to be unpacked
there. I feel like
that
list is hot garbage. That's why.
There is a lot to get to on this show. So you guys stay right where you are as we continue to roll through hour number two of the 3-hour extravaganza. We take you all the way up until 4, and of course, you know, the Blitz takes you from 4 to 7, so your lineup is all set for your afternoon of entertainment. And of course, we also want to remind you that our summer circuit's going to continue this Friday, R Bar, Houston Avenue, right by Washington Avenue. We are going to be there. You should be there, too. Us and the Blitz, 1 to 7 p.m., thanks to LafayetteTravel.com. Go to Lafayette, Louisiana by going to LafayetteTravel.com and register to win a 2-day family getaway. And you can register for our summer circuit giveaways while visiting us on these remotes all summer long. The grand prize is that Traeger Timberline 1300 wood pellet grill. We're giving it away at the end of the summer, $2,000 value. But just for showing up and entering, you're going to have chances to win gift cards. And of course, you get to see all of us. Stop by 1 to 7 p.m. R Bar, 1302 Houston Avenue.
Your home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.
Whether you're driving.
Check it out now. You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
You could just appease me once every, what, 6 months with good bump music? You know I love this song.
You
it's
love
taking
this
you
song.
That long to play this.
Yeah, I just saw it on the rotation on YouTube. I said, you know what? Might as well play it for your boy Joel. After seeing that hyperextension, we don't know how he feels today. He might be, you know, he might be hiding his tears and he needs y'all's love. And
you
guys,
Giannis?
No, you.
Oh, no, I'm fine. See, that's the thing. And I was thinking about this after I got some other notes and texts from people about their belief in my passion for the Bucks. It used to be at a very, very high level when I lived there. And there were times that there were still players that I worked with when I was growing up that I was pulling for there. But you know how I feel about this team this year. And I've changed my opinion. I said Giannis is overrated until he can make free throws and he can make threes.
Yeah.
He's overrated. He's well paid and he's a really good player, but he's not superstar to me until he can take over a game and he can score when his team needs a bucket. I also, as we just said last segment, I have a lot of issues with Mike Budenholzer. And so as much as I like the team, I like what the GM's been able to do to put good players around them. I was the one that had said before they even thought about it, getting rid of Bledsoe to bring in Holiday, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
But overall, the team doesn't impress me. And this is like, as we talked about earlier this week on Monday, this is a team that their window is this year. Because we know Brooklyn's coming back next year. There's going to be plenty of good teams in the East. They had a clear path to get there and maybe win it all.
Uh-huh.
And
I feel like you've been pretty objective. I just feel like, how about this? I'd argue you're a bigger Bucks fan. Because I actually genuinely believe you when you say you're a bigger Astros fan than you are.
I love the Astros as my
Milwaukee
number one baseball
Brewers
team.
Fan.
Yep. Yep.
I actually believe that. But I feel like you're more of a Bucks fan than you are a Brewers fan. So if you're...
So someone just asked me to rank my Wisconsin fandom, and it's Packers by a landslide.
Then Bucks, then Brewers.
No. I would say Badgers.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even
Packers,
think about
Badgers,
it.
Packers, Badgers. And then I would go Bucks, Brewers in a wash, third, fourth. And as that relates to my teams, it would be Packers... And then it would be Astros, and then it would be, you know, it used to be Rockets until a lot of things. Now I'm just objectively honest about the Rockets, but I care about them a lot because I put my blood, sweat, and tears into that organization
23 years. Of course.
So yeah. I want to see them do well. I want the Texans to do well. We just know that just doesn't look like it's going to be possible for quite a while with the moves that they've done. And then the Badgers, and then... The other two. I mean, and I have friends that work there.
I should have thought about Wisconsin. I didn't think about it. And Badgers, I'm assuming the football team more than the basketball team more than the football team. What do you say?
Football first.
Okay, I figured. And Wisconsin, you know their situation. Their basketball, you know what their situation is with football. It's just the fact that their strength of schedule always hurts them each and every year. But I did want to get to that Charles Barkley audio that I teased. Yeah. I'll give you a listen. I don't know if you're watching, if you're up, or you're taking care of Maddie or whatever, but this is what he had to say. He was calling stars soft again.
Chuck, what you got on your mind, man?
These dudes, man. These dudes, man.
What? What do you mean?
Every great player gets criticized.
Yes.
I don't hear that bull.
Crap.
Every great player. I have gotten criticized because I didn't win a championship. Michael Jordan, before he won the championship, yeah, he can't win. Shaq. Kobe, everybody's gotten criticized. This false narrative, I'm hearing these jackasses on television talking about somebody gets scrutinized more than other people. Give me a freaking break. Every great player who's played until they win a championship get criticized. But I got drafted with Michael Jordan. My first, I think he won the championship in his eighth year.
First 6 years in the league.
He won the championship six or eight?
I think it was seven.
Okay. Right. I remember when he was going up, when he put that 63 on the Celtics. Yeah, he's a great individual player, but he hasn't won the championship. They've always said that about me. Karl Malone, John Stockton, Patrick Ewing. I can go down the line and the line. But this notion that Paul George is a terrific player, but that goes with being a terrific player. And these other guys talk about he gets treated unfairly. Give me a freaking break.
I love it. I love every bit of it. And it had to be said, because in the press conference, as we talked about earlier this week, he came out and in the postgame, Paul George, and referring to a question and thinking he's so unfairly treated by the media and that he's not alone. And you got to kind of buck up. And I said this yesterday. You are getting paid millions and millions and millions of dollars, and it goes with the territory. So just like when we talked about talking to the media, whether you like it or not, it's part of the deal. It's part of the reason why, because these media outlets that are covering you spend tons of money to support the league in some cases with the flagships, the ABC and ESPNs and the TNTs and all these other places. And so if you want your money to keep flowing into your bank account on the 1st and the 15th, then you also got to realize that it's all part of the game. It's as much as you want it to be sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah.
There's times you're going to get your ass right in between the crosshairs.
And unlike the other exchange between Shaq and Barkley, where Shaq called Barkley a dummy for not knowing that Jeff Teague was a buck, he actually agreed with him in this particular instance and even said, look, you're right. Comes with the territory, but it's not like Paul George was complaining about it. He was asked the question, do you think it's unfair? He said yes, but he's not complaining about it, basically. So, and I think that's fair to point out. So it's not like Paul George is being a baby about it. He was asked, do you think it's unfair? He says, yeah, some of the criticism, I do think it's unfair, but, you know, this is what we have to go through. So to Paul George's credit, he wasn't making excuses as well. So I like that. I like that part. The other thing,
like Paul George, you're sticking up for him.
I like Paul George. I wanted Paul George to come to the Rockets. I thought that, I don't know if that report was true when Morey was trying to give up four first round picks for him.
Oh, for sure.
But I was about it, dude. I was about PG, man. I wanted PG to come to Houston. I don't know if he wanted to come to Houston, but I felt like he would have been a decent fit for the team, you know. But they probably would be in a better situation now if they had done that. But
here's where I'll go a step further to Chuck's points, Nick. And it's something that I've also said to you over the last couple months. The other thing is, back in the day, the toughness of the superstars, when the games were on the line like this in the playoffs, they were going to do what was ever necessary to play that game. Whether it was Clyde, who was bedridden and hadn't eaten and looked like he was on death's door and had a nurse giving him IV feeding when we were in the playoffs against Phoenix, but just his presence to walk through the locker room doors, put on a uniform, and give it a go. Or if it was someone that had a sprained ankle like Trae Young, going, tape it up extra hard. If I got to take something or give me a shot, but I'm not going to let my team down. This is the most important time of the year. I'm going out there. And on the flip side now, everybody that gets a hangnail is like, I'm out, and I'm going to be out for a while. So if you miss me, guys, sorry. I'm not taking any chances.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. I totally get it. I think Charles Barkley was spot on, though, with everything that he said. And look, I feel like Charles Barkley gets the most
scrutiny.
Yeah, dude, like for not winning a championship, he deals with it.
Oh, for sure.
Or he at least deals with it the best, because when you have a guy on the set who acts like all the time that it's not personal, when I feel like it is kind of personal, and he says that all the time. You're not a champ. You're a bum. You don't know nothing about championships. I mean, I think the average former player would be fed up with that by the fourth or fifth time that was said to him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But this has been, it's been years Shaq has been using that against Charles Barkley.
You know, the other thing though, Nick, is that Charles, exactly what I was talking about with the players, Charles accepts in his job. TNT pays him a lot of money. Sometimes they pay him so that he can be as honest and critical about and break it down. And sometimes it's to be the butt of the joke, but he knows it's all part of, at the end of the day, why they have a Hall of Fame studio show that is loved by so many, and he's paid so well because of it. So he understands that. That's what I'm talking about. These players have to understand. Like Kawhi Leonard, you know what? Part of the deal, why you got a max deal, and you get taken care of with all these extra things that you want and need and have to have happen wherever you sign. Part of the deal is, if you're okay to play, you're playing. If you're hurt, you sit on the bench. You don't hide in a suite and don't want anybody to see you or recognize you or talk about you. It's not part of the deal.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. I don't understand that either. Hey, do you remember when Shaq, when Pippen was talking about Charles Barkley, and he made all those comments, and then he later made comments about how Phil Jackson is a racist?
Who, Pip?
Yeah, Scottie Pippen. Mm-hmm. Well, Shaq joined FanSided, and they asked him about that situation, and he actually had something to say about Scottie Pippen, and then he also had something to say about Barkley as well that I think you find interesting. This is what it sounded like.
You have to think about it. He hasn't played, how long?
Oh, we got 2 decades now.
okay? And I heard in the business sector he's coming out with a brandy and he's coming out with a book.
Yeah.
It's probably just all promotions. Really, I don't want to get involved with other people's beef, but Phil's definitely not a racist. And I don't know what's going on with him and Durant and him and what he said about Barkley made a lot of sense. But again, I'm just like you. I'm just reading it, going wow, going ooh, going ah. I don't want to speculate, but I do know in our line of work that he's coming out with a new drink and he's coming out with a new book. So maybe this is all marketing. I don't know.
So he basically says Scotty's doing this for all marketing. Phil is definitely not a racist, and he can kind of understand what Pippen said about Charles Barkley.
So, and I had alluded to the fact that he got exposure for the GQ article with the Durant stuff and probably got exposure, although, like I said, I don't know if people want to drink an alcohol if it makes you sound this completely off base lame, with the way he was making his quotes. But in terms of the Barkley thing, I lived it firsthand, and so therefore I would say that Barkley is not Kevin Garnett in terms of fake tough. I think the two biggest fake tough guys the league has ever seen based on their stature are Kevin Garnett and Dwight Howard. They always waited till someone got in between them. I've told this story before.
Kevin Durant or Kevin Garnett?
Sorry, Kevin Garnett.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah, and Dwight Howard.
Okay.
Because they always, as big and tough as they thought they were, Garnett talked it. Dwight wanted to be looking like the Superman muscle man. But they always waited for guys to get between them and never really wanted to throw a punch. And the one time they squared off against each other when Dwight was with the Rockets, we were all laughing like, well, something's got to give now because now the two fake toughers are going at each other. But they both waited till their security guards got in the way and other players.
I
was in the Summit the night that Barkley and Shaq got into it.
Oh, man, that's badass.
And Charles literally picked that big dude up and moved him and tackled him. And I was in the back hallway. I left the TV truck, and I was going to check on Chuck. And I walked into our locker room where he was sitting there with just one of our security guys. And he was contemplating going, which was about 50 feet out the locker room door to the visiting team locker room to continue it. Because that's how fired up he was at the time.
He threw the hell out of that basketball before he picked his ass up, too. He threw that basketball right at his face, and he threw it hard.
Yeah, dude. And I said, first thing I walked in, I go, wow, you moved him. And he was like, I ain't done, white boy. He goes, I'm thinking about it right now. And I was like, come on, man. And he's like, I'm going right down that hallway. And I'm like, come on. And we talked about it at the time. But like,
I still go back and watch that clip
on
YouTube.
You're not fake tough if you know that you are outsized by almost a foot and outweighed if it's almost by what, 50 pounds or more. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean he clearly wasn't scared of anybody.
Nope.
When you're outweighed that much. How much did Charles Barkley weigh? Well, he was a little bit heavier at that point because he was
His Rocket stays, his max weight as a Rocket, I want to say, was like 260, 265.
Oh, so he probably had a 75-pound.
Shaq had to be three bills plus, right?
I would imagine at least 60-pound discrepancy, yeah. I would imagine.
Yep. Yeah, so, I mean, that you can't call a guy fake tough. I mean, I think that's Shaq doing what they do on a nightly basis, just using it as a chance to take another jab.
And you won't be fake tough if you go to Apollo Men's
No,
Health.
Because if you aren't feeling like you used to feel when you were willing to pick someone up and tackle them, you can do it with the people at Apollo Men's Health. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, they can help you feel like you once did and get to feeling great again. Men and women, they have hormone therapy for you. And if you want to get on a workout program, it starts with a total body composition analysis, which only takes minutes, but can give you a ton of data to work with as you set up a program. If you want to recover quicker, they have HGH peptide therapy, and they do it all with care because Dr. O and his staff have worked at the other clinics. They know what to do and what not to do, and they do it the best way they possibly can for their customers. Check them out today. Two locations located near downtown Houston, and it starts with making that first appointment. Go to apollomh.com. When you do, you're going to find out most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders. But more importantly, mention my name and ESPN Radio. Get a free B12 shot on your first visit. And then make sure you're honest with them when you answer their questions. And they're going to find you results by putting you on a program that's going to work for you. They're good people doing great things, and they can help you out today. Get in touch with the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
90 in the books, a little less than 90 to go as we get to the second half of the show. It's the Press Box on ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM. It's Nick and myself individually. Together, we are the Press Box. We talked a lot about a lot of things to do with the Astros, to do with the NBA playoffs. We were going to bring this up the other day, and it even makes more sense now, as I told you I was going to do some homework, and I did. But the Rockets have a lot of big decisions coming up this offseason. We know they have three first-round picks, including number 2, 23, and 24. We know that they had a 17-win season when they were basically the laughingstock of the NBA. Nick posed the question the other day, and we talked about how long of a leash does Rafael Stone have. He'd like you to believe that in terms of the Harden trade, he has until 2030, and no one gets that much time, asked Sam Presti. I mean, not Sam Presti. Sam Hinkie, who wanted you to trust the process. All his quotes seem to think that even if he screws up this draft, that draft picks these days are more of a get-lucky crapshoot, and that sometimes you hit, sometimes you miss, and you shouldn't be judged on that or be held accountable. That's false, okay? Because I think, just like I said, when you're talking about who should the Rockets take, there are guys that have a bigger upside that you're going to have to wait maybe 3 years to see their full development. And I think as much as the organization should be willing to do that, I don't think the general manager is. That's why before he even got the pick, and then after he got the pick subsequently, he hinted that he would be willing to discuss a trade, which I said at the time, and Nick, you know I back this up every day, that would be the most idiotic, ludicrous thing this franchise could do in terms of, because they've at least finally accepted they're in rebuild mode.
To trade away what specifically? Just to be
trade
clear.
Away the 2 pick for... Okay. Because I don't know what you're going to get and what the limitations and what you can and can't do trade-wise. I don't think anything that you would get in return would benefit the franchise as much as getting this pick right, no matter how long you have to wait, whether it be in the case of a Green, who might be the most talented player in the draft, or a Mobley, who has to fill out, as opposed to guys that are more NBA-ready now but might not have as big an upside, Suggs Cunningham. So, I was disgusted when I heard that they were thinking about trading it. Now, that might just be GM speak. But the other thing that I was really upset about was, because these guys got to do their homework, because it's so important, so that, as we said, it doesn't take 5 to 7 years or more for a rebuild. Hopefully it takes 3 to 5 by getting picks right, making the right moves. Christian Wood's a little bit of a prima donna. And I had heard some rumblings, so I did some digging.
Okay.
Christian Wood believes he's a max player next contract. I told you right off the top, if Christian Wood's your max player, you're a bad team.
Yeah, he's not, unless he develops so well over the next 2 seasons and it earns him that, I don't see how he's a max player. But we do know how the money's going around. The rumblings about him being a bit of a diva, what do we know about that? Is he being difficult? Is he just...
Difficult in the locker room, whiny, has to have his way. If it doesn't go his way, doesn't kind of... introvertedly goes into it, doesn't want to talk to anybody, or if he does, you know, it's not good. How he handles his teammates and everything else. And we saw it. You and I talked about whatever John Wall and he didn't have going. Wall was looking him off when he was open, and it seemed like that there was some body language that indicated things weren't exactly.
Friction.
Yeah. So,
well, when you don't get the ball and you're deemed kind of the upcoming star, I can see how that bothers you. At the same time, when you're a max player like John Wall, I guess it's harder for him to swallow the pill that, you know what, I am not the player that I used to be, and I'm not deserving of the ball and having the possession during offense the entire time. Now, Christian Wood averaged 21 points per game this past season, the best of his career by far. He hasn't had a season that close until 2 seasons ago where he averaged 16.9 with the Pelicans. Mm-hmm. He's owed Joel 13.6 for the upcoming season, followed by $14.3 million in the 2023 season. I don't know how you make him a max player with those numbers. Now, like I
you
said,
you got his stats up.
I do.
How many years is he? How many teams has he played with in the NBA?
He has. I will look that up right now. He's got three, four, five. Houston would be his sixth.
Six teams he's already played for. He was undrafted. The Rockets had him the first time and loved him so much they let him go. All right? He bounced around. He finally found himself. He matured a little bit. And now he gets his first payday. He gets to a team where, for by default, if by nothing else, and by the salaries, he became a go-to guy. And suddenly he started feeling really good about himself, so much so that he took on the attitude and started believing the clips and the hype that he should be an all-star and he should be a franchise player. And that sometimes could be the worst thing that could possibly happen, especially when you forget about your roots. Where did you come from? You had struggles. You went through a lot of teams before you found the right one. Now you're in a good situation, making good money. You know what? Treat it with the same kind of care as you would have if it was another team that you were trying to make. And then you're going to be fine. But the fact that all of a sudden you think you're, you know, top-tier guy, I should be coddled, I should be put up on this pedestal, it's a bad look, man.
Yeah, it is a bad look. And maybe if he, maybe this continues in the event that he plays well in this upcoming season. And then you also have to understand, who is his agent? What is his agent telling him in his ear? Like, oh, man, we're getting offers from this team, and that team. Yeah, I can get you this deal. I can get you this deal. When you look at the future and the foreseeable future of the Rockets, why would he be loyal to this team anyway in the event he can get paid? I mean, why? I mean, the team is probably not going to do well for a while. I can see why getting paid from somewhere else would be enticing. But the good news for the Houston Rockets is they got him under contract. He's probably a tradable asset at $13, $14 million. So
preach
it's okay.
Because that's what I'm talking about.
And look, next year, if he continues to do well and he continues to be a diva, if everything what you're saying is true, because it's all, you know, I guess rumors or hearsay according to, you know, whatever. But I'm just saying.
Sources.
I'm just saying, if that continues, then you can trade him away. If he gets to the point where he's an absolute locker room cancer, you can trade him away. Chances are Gordon is going to be gone.
But you got to do it before the word travels too fast, right? Until the word travels across the league that he's a problem.
He's 25. They'll deal with it. They'll deal with his attitude.
Because I would say right now, you think about this. This is another reason why they got to get the draft right. If they don't get the draft right this year, they don't have any picks for the next foreseeable long-term future of this, thanks to Daryl Morey. It's going to be either swaps in which you're going to lose the pick, or it's going to be you gave your first-round pick up to Oklahoma City or other teams to take your trash or what you deemed as unfixable situations like Chris Paul. So with all that, it's pressing that you get it right this season. And if you're going to be a problem as part of it, I've heard Golden State would be interested in him. Well, then what are you giving me? Because here's the thing. I need picks because I'm not going to be good next year. And I'm not going to be good in the following year. And I don't have any picks to get better quicker. So if a guy like this, which I told you at the time when they were looking at him, 9 to 10 would have been great. They overpaid at 13 and a half. Everybody's like, oh, you're out of your mind. Look at how he played early in the season. Look how he played for the whole season. When he played against bigger talent, stronger talent, tougher talent, he wasn't the same player. He couldn't stay healthy. So if you look at his career, he's had injury issues too. The Rockets are better off if they can get assets for him, and he's better off going to a team so that he can prove that he's worth what he thinks his true value is.
Yeah, particularly with that Golden State Warriors hypothetical you just presented. There's literally nobody on that team, basically, that they're willing to give up for him outside of assets.
They got picks, and that's what you need.
You need
picks.
Yeah, that's all they can. They're not going to give up anybody in the core.
No, but
they're not
going to
give up some of their role players either.
The Rockets don't want that. They don't want to take on a lot of big contracts. They want to take young players, and they want to take draft picks so that they can restock the cupboard.
Yeah.
So that's what we're looking at with that. This is a massive draft for Rafael Stone and the Rockets. If he doesn't get it right, whether he likes it or not, or thinks he deserves to be like not judged for years and years to come, he is going to be under the microscope, and it is going to be a pressure cooker because there's experienced general managers that are going to be out there that are going to be clamoring for the opportunity to come here and be the next guy. So they got to get it right. Before we get to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. They're great for the people of Houston, all Houstonians and the people of Houston. They've been here for a long time, and Corey and his staff do a phenomenal job, and it starts with the best ratings in the business. You can check on all of it, Facebook, home, wherever you go, Better Business Bureau, they're great. Their warranties are longer and better than your average roofer. The products they use are the best in the business, starting with CertainTeed shingles. But more so than anything else, they have great customer service, and they take care of Houstonians because they know words travel fast, And they want to make sure that everybody says when you need a roofing job done, whether it be commercial or for your house, a roof repair, even home repairs or a fence in your yard, call them first. And the reason is because they take care of their customers, and it starts with a free no-obligation inspection that costs you nothing. All you do is pick up the phone, and you call them at 832-521-3001. They come to you, and they tell you what they can do. Then they go back to doing the rest of their day. You want them to come back, just reach back out, make an appointment, and you're going to find out what I just told you is true. Before, during, and after the sale, they are the best at taking care of their customers and doing quality work. Check them out also at FITZroofing.com, but check them out one way or the other. Get that free no-obligation inspection, and remember, Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
Do you ever wonder what ESPN 97.5 hosts talk about during the breaks? Well, now we have your f***ing answer.
I don't know why you got to do it with the FM. All you got to do is say earmuffs.
Just go to twitch.tv/ESPN97.5 for exclusive uncensored content.
Can you earmuff it for me?
Listening to the Press Box on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
All right, we talked about it, Nicholas. Let's get to it. Houston, the only city in Texas to make the top five in worst traffic in America for 2021.
Let's hear these cities.
Texas A&M's Urban Mobility Report comes out. Number one, and it should be every single freaking year, is New York.
Agreed. Even though I've never been, but it has to be.
Oh, it's awful. Number two, Boston. Surprising. Very surprising to me.
Is it?
Because I think L.A. is a complete hellhole of traffic. And I think that New York and L.A. should be one and two for the foreseeable future.
I would have assumed that L.A. is worse than Boston as well.
Having driven in both. However, they say this is based on the amount of hours sitting in traffic during the year 2020. New York, 56 hours. Boston, 50 hours. With a all cities with a population over 3 million people. I'll give you the stipulations there. Okay, New York, then Boston, then Houston, then L.A., then San Francisco, then D.C., and then Dallas. Because a lot of you are chiming in, Dallas should be up there.
It should be, because their construction is out of hand.
I'm looking at this going, how in the hell can New York and L.A. not be 1-2?
Yeah.
And then I guess I've never driven in Boston like I have New York and Los Angeles. But if you're telling me Boston is right there neck and neck with Houston, okay. But in terms of Houston's traffic, the things that will just never, ever, ever make sense to me, how they don't understand left lane, fast lane.
But do cities really understand that, though?
Chicago for sure does.
Do they really?
No question. It is a massive thing in Illinois that you realize driving in Chicago, and even up as it relates to migrating north to Milwaukee, left lane, fast lane, and they're adamant about it.
All right, well, here's my deal, because two of the cities that you listed, I've never driven in, right? New York or Boston. I've never had to experience the traffic in those two cities. But I've driven in Dallas, I've driven in Los Angeles, and I've obviously driven here in Houston. My whole deal, what the things that puts it over the top for me in Los Angeles, and people can correct me if I'm wrong if you're a Houstonian and you go through this, I don't experience Sunday traffic on Sundays during the day in Houston like I did in Los Angeles on multiple occasions. To the point where you're just trying to get somewhere that with no traffic would be normally 8 to 10 minutes, but because you live in Los Angeles, it's taking you an hour to 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And I always tell the story about going to Rodeo Drive, and I was looking at Lyft, and I wanted to get back to the hotel in downtown, and it just went from 30 minutes to an hour and a half to 2 hours, like almost instantly. So for me, the deal breaker is, unless a Houstonian could tell me, and I know the deal breaker is Sunday's traffic. If you're a city that has bad traffic on a Sunday, I hate it. Now, the Galleria can get pretty trafficy on a Sunday. Like, if you drive around 59, 610, and I know 610 North is close to 2021. But that area right there on Sundays, it could be bad. I hate.
But even this weekend, what I don't understand is,
I hate staying in traffic when it's a Sunday.
They went they reduced a couple of lanes on Saturday morning when I was heading downtown. All of a sudden, it's standstill traffic where I'm sitting in the same spot basically for 15 or 20 minutes going, why? What? Or the thing that I never will understand is heading back from downtown after 3:30 p.m. on 59, there aren't a whole lot of exits. It's a straight drive. We're just going from point A to point B, and yet you end up in a parking lot from the compact center to the Beltway.
Yeah.
It makes zero sense to me.
I do see the traffic picking up a little bit more now that I'm getting off at 4 and everything is open back up. Yep. Like yesterday, there was like a Mercedes on the side of the road, like in the feeder somewhere. And it, like I guess they had like a tow truck and they're like on the freeway. And I was like, ugh. But I still think L.A. is worth. I don't know the website that did that. I still think L.A. is worth. Now, someone in the chat, IOT H-Town, said L.A. was all locked down and that's why traffic wasn't as bad. Maybe that's the case.
Well, so Lisa backed that up. She said, because they did this story this morning on the news, and she said that L.A. and San Francisco dropped due to the quarantine and because of the strict restrictions on people being out in California. That's why they went down.
And that makes sense because they were on lockdown big time.
So it was New York, Boston, Houston, L.A., then Frisco at 5, D.C. at 6, Dallas at 7, Chicago all the way down to 8, Atlanta 9, Philly 10. I've never had an issue driving in Philly or Atlanta, and really not a lot in Chicago.
God, that must suck for an Uber driver, too. Like, shout out to the Lyft and Uber drivers who just, they know they're going on a ride, and inevitably they're going to be in traffic, and there's nothing anybody can do about it. Like, literally nothing. You're going to be, like, if you're a guy in L.A. prior to the pandemic and you're an Uber driver, like, but I guess that's a good thing, right? Because you get paid by the weight, right? Like, I'm sure if it's an incredibly long time, I guess a $100 Uber ride is probably pretty standard in California,
in
L.A.
I think it goes with the territory. Like, you just you expect it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like most people in New York don't own a car. They just understand that they're taking taxis everywhere, and sometimes it's – but to your point, the one that I always go to is when we used to go to the broadcast meetings every year in New York, I would always get Matt Bullard and Craig Ackerman and myself tickets to the Mets, the Yankees, or so we could see different venues and sites. And it was crazy that every time – if our meetings ran long, you'd talk to the concierge and go, well, it's a 7:05 start or a 7:30 start. It was like 3:30 or 4 o'clock, and the concierge are saying, if you aren't already on a subway or you aren't already in a car that's taking you to the stadium, forget it. You're not going to get there to the fifth or sixth inning. I go, what are you talking about? Back home, I can load up from Sugar Land in rush hour traffic, and I could be at Minute Maid Park in about 30, 35, 40 minutes max.
Yeah, it's not that bad. People exaggerate. It's not that bad for my house either. It could be way worse, like in terms of leaving. Even when I used to cover all the Rockets games, I didn't struggle that much to leave.
Well, and same thing with on a Sunday for a Texans game. You know it's a Sunday. You know it's supposed to be jam-packed, but because there's so many arteries heading in to the stadium and so many ways you can get around the traffic backing up, it's still max maybe, and I'll overstate an hour, but most times it's not. It's not that bad. And then in New York, you say, well, if you haven't gotten left in about 2.5-3 hours prior to game time, you ain't making it. That's ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I think that's like that too I think Alabama.
Like, L.A.'s like that way with Dodger games. Like, I know that too because we've driven those.
Yeah, the Crimson Tide game, like you got to leave several hours in advance.
So that was surprising to me. Houston was all the way up to 3, and it was higher on the list than Los Angeles. I would think and hope that that's only
that has to change
due to the
year.
Pandemic, and yeah. And it will change next year. But I was shocked by that some of the cities where they fell on that list. So you guys can chime in on that if you want. But we've got 2 hours in the books, which means 1 hour still to go in the show.
And plenty a giveaway,
huh?
A giveaway. Sorry.
Oh, we got giveaways.
We got two giveaways.
Lots. Oh boy. Lots of reasons to stay motivated, listen, and participate.
Of course. So,
therefore, you guys do exactly what, just do that, and we'll have plenty of fun in the final hour of the program. It's the Press Box, ESPN.
ESPN 97.5. League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.